On Rogue this week, Louise McSharry writes about the disturbing proliferation of fatphobic memes since lockdown began. We have author Vicky Kavanagh, who meditates on becoming a mother for the first time in the midst of a global pandemic. And Fionnuala Jones tries out the latest beauty products made for the vulva and questions what it said about her feminism. For all that and more, visit roguecollective.ie and sign up for a weekly curated issue of Rogue into your inbox for just €4 a month. On this week's Vulture Club, Jen and I are joined by author and columnist Louise O'Neill, who spills on her ongoing cultural obsession, Britney Spears' abs. I mean, I think we can honestly say we're all right there with her. With low-rise jeans threatening a comeback, we travel back to the dark days of the late 90s and unpack just what growing up in the shadow of that vast flat abdomen did to us as young women. We discuss the toxic messaging around food and exercise and how we as a culture often feel a sense of ownership over the bodies of our female stars. Also later in the show, we chat Mindy Kaling's new series Never Have I Ever, and I put the disturbing comeback of the chain letter straight in the bin. We've already prepped Louise O'Neill, this week's Vulture Club guest, with a beautiful anecdote about sperm analysis from Jen. So Louise, welcome to the Vulture Club. Thanks for joining us.
I think if I had known that I was going to hear that story about sperm, I'm not sure if I would have agreed to come on. But thank you, Jen, for sharing all the same.
That's insulting, and you're welcome.
I thought you were going to say something like, I probably wouldn't have had, oysters for lunch or something.
I regularly have oysters for lunch.
We know Inshadani folk.
We're very
like the finer here. Things.
That's what they call it, the quarantine oyster. Sounds a little disgusting. Like a homemade variety.
And how is lockdown life in Inshadani treating you?
I'm actually missing Inshadani because it's just outside of my 2 kilometres, but I'll be able to go now. It's fine, you know, it's funny. It just kind of goes between being so boring and then really stressful for no apparent reason. And I think that there's so much anxiety and fear, like it's really hard not to pick up on that. And when people keep saying things like, this has really made me, you know, think about what's important, I'm like, I just feel like that's not happening for me. I'm like, why am I not having these moments of like, come to Jesus? I just feel constantly going, what the fuck is going on? And when is this going to be over?
He has forsaken us, Jen.
Yeah.
I think really stressful and really boring is actually one of the best descriptions I've heard now of lockdown life. Definitely, I just kind of swing wildly from one to the other all day long, barely formulating thoughts about where I am on that spectrum. I'm just like, ah.
Are you baking? Are you both baking a lot? I was going to say this seems
hell
to be.
No.
Yeah.
It's mad. I don't know. I'm just a dyed-in-the-wool contrarian. So the rest of the time, bake quite regularly on my Instagram, and for like my column in the Sunday Indo is all recipes. Yeah. And since the rest of the world has taken it up, I have now rejected it. I am knitting a lot.
Oh, wow.
I do knit anyway. What are you doing to alleviate the mania?
Well, I'm certainly not knitting because... Like, my grandmother was an amazing knitter, and recently we found this certificate that my mother had won, like, a national, like, award for her knitting when she was, like, 7. But I was notoriously bad at it. Like, in school, you know, everyone else did, like, a hat and a scarf and gloves and slippers, and I knit a quarter of a scarf, which my grandmother actually knit for me. So I'm definitely not knitting. Sorry, Sophie. Like, what am I doing? It's funny, for the first 2 weeks, I couldn't read, I couldn't write, I couldn't watch anything even on Netflix. I just felt like my concentration was completely shot. But I've definitely got back into a routine of just, I'm writing, reading, going for walks. It's really very dull, you know, sort of the same thing every single day. But like, sometimes I think the routine is helpful, and then other times I think I might go mad. So again, really going between 2 massive extremes.
Oh yeah, it sounds divine. Because I suppose I have a lot of kids near me at all times. So does Jen.
Yeah.
I would give anything to get them away from me.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying about the focus. I found I was completely unable to focus on a book or anything. Mm. Literally until this weekend just gone, my reading drought was broken by Caroline O'Donoghue's new book, Scenes of a Graphic Nature.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'm loving it. I'm nearly finished it now. And I'm actually buzzing off just having read a book again. Yeah. I haven't read a book since Sunny, my new baby, was like a week old. So that's 9 weeks, which is long for me. Okay. I just couldn't stick with anything. Oh, wait, I read Nisha Dolan
as well. I loved that.
And that is brilliant too.
Yeah, so funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like, in fairness, I think it was really what I needed as well, because it's like not overly taxing, but you kind of feel smart reading it, which is my favorite brand of book. You know?
There's a lot of those books at the moment, I think, that are doing really well, is that they look smart on Instagram, but they're really accessible. I think that's the sweet spot, you know, that we all have to be aiming for.
And you have a new book coming out soon at the end of the summer, don't you?
I do. Well, I mean, it's supposed to be coming out the start of September, but the world is on fire. So I'm trying not to make any plans, you know, too far in the distance. So, yeah, I mean, at the moment it's slated for September 3rd and they haven't said anything about changing it. But we shall see.
And is it totally put to bed?
Oh, yeah, it's completely done. I've actually started something new. I don't usually go from one book to the next so quickly, but actually really weirdly I felt like I started in January and I thought, oh, it would be a good distraction, because sometimes I think when a book is coming out, I'm not sure if you feel like this, Sophie, but like the anxiety is really, really consuming, and it's kind of this real obsessive behavior and thoughts about how's it going to do and how are people going to, you know, respond to it. So I actually find that if I'm working on something different, it really manages to process that anxiety in a way that feels kind of healthy and helpful. So I started in January on this new book, and now I'm just so grateful that I have a project to go to every day, because it just gives me that sense of like normalcy and just routine, I think, that's been really helpful.
Yeah, yeah, and to be kind of in it already, like mid in it, in that kind of zone of like, I just need to go to A, to B, to C, and you know where you're going.
100%, because I think if it was at the start where you're trying to be creative and trying to think of the characters and the world and the story, I think my brain would be a little bit too broken for that right now.
Oh, yes, I identify. So, anyway, we asked you on to tell us what your I Still Think About cultural moment is. And when you said what you had chosen, I got so excited, because I think this is a very universal one. I think that none of us have stopped thinking about this it's over 20 years now.
Yeah.
So go on, give us the top line of what this is.
Okay, so I saw this article on, I'm not sure if either of you read Go Fug Yourselves. It's this website. Cool. And they do, at the moment, they're doing a lot of like retrospectives, because obviously there are no celebrities going to like premieres that they can show the dresses. So they're doing sort of like all these old photos. And they did one from the late 90s. And it was really, you remember those like so low rise, the jeans were so low rise that like you could see the top of people's pubic hair. Like,
oh, yeah.
And so they did a complete slideshow of all of these photos. And then they said the words that struck terror into my heart. They said, oh, this is actually, you know, due for a comeback. And I was like, no, why would you do this? And of course, Britney Spears was one of the main people that kept coming up in the photographs. And I just couldn't stop thinking about when I was a teenager, when Britney Spears had just come out and she was just this complete whirlwind and superstar, and her abs, like I think every girl of that age was just obsessed with Britney Spears' stomach, because it was so toned and so neat and so tiny, and obviously she wore the crop tops and the super low rise.
You could see so much of it.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
The biggest part of her body.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, it was like an 8-pack.
She was
it just went on and on.
She was just ahead on like, on a, as you said, an 8-pack. I remember that there was this, you know, the way there was those magazines like How to Achieve Britney Spears' Stomach. And I just remember this one thing, that it was that she did 1,000 sit-ups every day. And this was presented like a completely normal piece of information. And I was like,
totally achievable thing.
I mean, okay, well then clearly I should be doing 1,000 push-ups every day. And then like strain my neck trying to do the push-ups or the sit-ups, should I say. And it's just like, it was just the way, and they also presented it like, oh, you know, she eats a lot of these Starbucks, you know, like those big massive frappuccinos. And then they're like, there's 2,000 calories in this, and this is how she burns it off. And it was just so unhealthy, the way that they presented this. Like, first of all, this is how many calories is in this food. This is how you have to burn it off. You have to do 1,000 sit-ups every day if you want to have Britney Spears' stomach. And I really wanted to have Britney Spears' stomach. But not so much, I don't
you
think
and
I
everybody
ever,
else.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I ever managed the 1,000 sit-ups a day now, I have to say. And like, it's madness.
Would you have even come remotely close?
I don't, I mean, it's funny because now, like, I'm so much fitter now than I was at that age. And I probably, like, you know, with gym classes and stuff, might do like 100 sit-ups in a class or something. And understand now that that's a perfectly reasonable amount. And actually, that's probably as much as you should be doing without severely damaging yourself. But it's just crazy, I think, when you look back, the messages that were given about body, about weight, about like diet and exercise, like really actually quite dangerous messages. And it was all directed, I think, at girls who were Britney Spears' age, so like teenage girls.
15.
Yeah, 15, 16.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I remember, that because obviously the video was her in school, in a school uniform that was obviously tied up to be a crop top. And I just remember it was so, like, it was so hard hitting that, like, this was what we were to aspire to. Like, she was literally wearing the uniforms that we were wearing, more or less, like most people in Irish schools had a uniform. And she was just held up as, like, emblematic of kind of what a teenage girl should be. And I just remember it being really actually, like, sort of scared by the vast chasm of difference between me and Britney Spears. And how was I ever going to close this?
And you know, it was interesting at the time, though, because we all wore uniforms, but nobody in America wore school uniforms.
Yeah.
So for us, it was like, oh, a direct, like a direct rule that we must now follow. But I guess for them, it they absorbed that as something kind of different. Like maybe it was sort of more tongue-in-cheek, or it read as a bit of
or I think it's the Catholic girls' school in America is that kind of image of kind of a sexy virgin in American culture.
Yeah.
But do you remember as well, I always remember that kind of year that the song came out, I was like first year, second year in secondary school, and I remember looking at the girls in my year who I thought had that, like who were the kind of anointed ones, who looked like Britney Spears by whatever trick of genetics. And I remember feeling like not just like not Britney Spears, but as a result of not being Britney Spears, I remember feeling like a monster. Do you remember feeling just monstrous when you were a teenage girl?
Oh God, yeah.
Of course.
Constantly. I don't think I
revolting.
I feel like most teenage girls, no matter how pretty they were, just feel like that. I just think it's part of everything's changing so quickly, and you're trying to get like all these hormones, and you're trying to just figure it out, and you just feel so unsure and insecure that I actually think sometimes it doesn't matter what you look on the outside, you're just going to feel monstrous on the inside anyway. You'll always find something to go, oh, this isn't as good as, you know.
I think you're kind of onto something about that rapid change. The most I have felt that keyed into being that age before has been being pregnant, when your body changes rapidly.
Wow.
And you're suddenly wearing this flesh suit of somebody else. And it's very hard to wrap your head around during that time. And knowing if there's going to be an end to it when you're pregnant is one thing. But as a teenager, it's kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? You used to wake up and just have a new thing hanging off you. And then you had to try and clothe it or shave it. Or hide it, you know, that way. Anyway, that's what I think.
And I suppose the problem is that, like, you know, some people do, you know, Britney Spears probably does have like a naturally quite athletic frame. So it's not trying to shame her for her body. I think it was just, there was no diversity of body shape. It was like, this is the only way that you can look if you want to be acceptable, if you want to be loved. And I think at that age, you're just so desperate not to sort of stand out from the crowd in a negative way anyway. And that it just felt like this massive... Just this massive pressure. And I think that it's, when you look back, and as I said about the messages and, you know, what the stars really weigh and, you know, the stars exercise and diet regimes. And it's like, it's so, it's just so unattainable for anyone, let alone a teenage girl. Like they don't say, oh, they also have, you know, personal trainers and private chefs and they have people to monitor this, and this is their job to look this way. Your job is to go to school and make friends and, you know, do well in your exams and figure out who you are. Like, your job is not to be an international pop star or to look like one.
Yeah, and enjoy your crisp sandwich and not even be aware of, or the bloody calorie content of an apple or whatever.
Yeah.
I just remember Diet Coke and popcorn was like the meal of secondary school for fucking everyone. Yeah. But you're so right about that kind of like homogenous kind of cohort of like acceptable women that was kind of served to us as teenagers. And I see it all the time now where I'm like so excited that other women are allowed, basically full stop. Mm. Like, as in, we're allowed to just see some modicum of diversity in the media now. And it's still not great, but it's something. Mm. Like, I was saying to you, Louise, about being really obsessed with Beth Ditto when I was a teenager. When I discovered her, the lead singer of The Gossip, and, you know, funnily enough, she's born the same year as Britney Spears. And I remember being, like, obsessed with her in this really kind of, like, forbidden way almost of, like, it seemed like she was such a kind of a transgressor for being a fat woman and kind of, like, you know... having a career in pop and it was like, I just remember it blowing my tiny 14-year-old, 15-year-old mind. You know, that kind of way, because I think everyone else we were looking at was the low-rise army of Christina Aguilera, Britney.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, we had been told that, like, that wasn't possible, that it wasn't possible to be fat and glamorous and successful and popular. You know, that we had been told that if you were fat, you would be, you know, despised, and you would, you know, you would repel people. So I suppose to see someone actually proving that that wasn't true actually felt like almost as kind of destabilizing. Like, I think that was
momentous.
That she was destabilizing the status quo. Because, I mean, even if you look back, I think it's really interesting to look. I was talking to a friend recently about Sophie Dahl. This friend of mine is quite a bit younger than I am, and I said, oh, I remember when she first became a model, and, you know, she was considered like this really fat woman, and but, like, you know, she was so beautiful, and I sent her a photo of this really famous ad campaign that she did. I think it was for Yves Saint Laurent, and she just texted back and she went, this woman was a plus size model. And I looked at the photo again, because you know the way when you've seen an image so often, it's almost as if you can't see it anymore. There's like a blindness. And I looked at it and I went, my God, what? You know, or like Jessica Simpson, you know, like those, you remember that time she wore those high-rise jeans to, we're going from low-rise to high-rise here, but when she wore those really high-waisted jeans to, I think it was some sort of event in the States, and they absolutely crucified her because she didn't have the same figure that she had when she was doing the Dukes of Hazzard. And I looked back at it now and I was like, this photo wouldn't raise an eyebrow now. Like, no one would take any notice whatsoever. And I know, you know, obviously things aren't perfect, but things have definitely changed, even in the last 10 years, because that photo was so just completely, like, banal nearly. Like, I couldn't see it. But at the time, it was just such a shock, and this kind of the messaging of, oh, she's really let herself go, she's put on weight, it's disgusting. It was as if
a failure, basically, was implied.
And I think it was as if we as a culture owned her, and that we, like, deserved the right for her, or we wanted her to look a certain way and we demanded it, and therefore she had to look the way we wanted her to look. It was so fucked up.
And we got angry when she didn't.
Yeah.
look like. The anger, and like when you were talking about Beth Ditto and kind of disrupting the status quo or whatever we were kind of all aiming for. And it was a genuine rage that came, was sort of, you know, people were angry that you were allowed to be fat here in public. And I guess part of the reason maybe for that was that we were collectively, some of us, aspiring so, and putting so much headspace and time and effort and starvation and discomfort and, you know, into this goal. And the actual fucking audacity of somebody not doing any of that, existing and maybe succeeding, was just too much to sort of cope with.
It's a bit like at the moment when we're all in lockdown, and if you see someone who you think is breaking the rules and you're like, I will murder that person because how dare they, when I am following everything, how fucking dare they? Instead of just going, that's actually none of my business if whatever my neighbour is doing really doesn't, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. It's so interesting, actually. You know, just, I don't know whether it's because I've been kind of curating my social media to within an inch of its life now for the last couple of years, where I feel like the whole kind of diet rhetoric really has gone away to a certain extent. Mm. Do you think that's just our bubbles, that we think we've kind of triumphed over it a bit? Or do you think it's as still as kind of toxic as ever out there?
I think a part of it is the bubble that you create. And I know even in my own life, having had conversations with people going, this language isn't helpful, I'd prefer if we didn't talk about this, you know, this isn't, I don't think this is a useful conversation to be having. So I think maybe people are more aware of the fact that I don't want to participate in those conversations in my personal life. But I also think culturally, like the way the media talks, again, I banned the Daily Mail about 9 or 10 years ago, so I'm probably thinking of the culture that I consume as well. But I do think there has been a shift in the way that we talk about women's bodies. Like, I don't think that, let's say what happened with Jessica Simpson, I don't think that would fly today. I think there would just be a complete backlash with people being like, do not talk about a woman like this. She is this incredibly successful businesswoman. Do not reduce her to the size of her jeans. Like, she's so much more than that. But then sometimes, you know, I'll notice things where, what happens, I go on this writing retreat to this beautiful place in Armagh, and I find it really interesting the way that women, particularly older women, will talk about their bodies and talk about what they're eating, and kind of they'll say, oh, you're not having dessert tonight, you're watching your figure. And I'm like, no, I'm just not having dessert because I ate more at dinner. Like, it's really interesting to sort of see, I suppose, because I've very carefully curated both my personal life and my online life, to see that spill over and the way that that kind of toxic conversations can happen. And I'm like, I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Like, say in Only Ever Yours, your first book, there was a lot of, like, even though the characters, it was a kind of a dystopian sort of universe for anyone who hasn't read. The characters were oppressed by oppressors, but they also policed themselves so much, and they were all young women, and they were all, I mean, you'd obviously do a much better job of explaining it, but they were all in a kind of almost finishing school for sort of, I don't know, perfect women, you know, with all of their intake of food being monitored, their behaviors, everything. And that's interesting, the kind of self-policing that kind of, you know, grows up among women.
Oh, yeah.
Very much.
Especially, you know, I went to an all-girls school, and it is fascinating the policing that happens amongst girls. And I don't say that because I think it's so easy. People go, oh, you know, it's women tearing down other women, and women are such bitches to other women. And I said, well, like, firstly, we've all grown up in this society, and like, we've all internalized that misogyny, whether you're a man or a woman. And often as girls, like, you are sort of trained to compete with each other, and not necessarily, you know, who is the smartest or who's getting the best grades or, you know, whatever. But a lot of the time on who's the thinnest, who's the prettiest, who can get the most attention from men. And it's very hard to see other women as your allies if you think that there's a scarcity, and that there can only be one person at the table. There can only be the prettiest. There can only be, you know, whatever the prize is. And when you're competing with each other like that, you do tend to police each other. Like, you know, what are you eating? And a lot of slut shaming, you know, a lot of policing around women's bodies and female sexuality. And I suppose it's something that I found really difficult to deal with when I was in school. And I suppose that was why, you know, they always say with your first book that you're like working out some sort of childhood trauma. So, yeah. And I think it's the constant, like that idea that someone's watching you. When I was a teenager, we'd had a death in my family and I lost a lot of weight very quickly, but I hadn't actually even noticed myself because I wasn't the sort of teenager who weighed myself. And people, like friends of my mother's and you know, people in school kept saying, oh my God, you've lost so much weight. And I honestly, and I really believe this, if no one had said anything to me, I would have just gained the weight back over a few months and wouldn't even have noticed, except going, oh, my school skirt is a bit looser. But I think it was that idea that people are watching you, people are aware when you lose weight, people are aware when you gain weight, and they're attaching a moral value to that. Like, once that gets into your head, it's so hard. Even now, as an adult and someone who's been in recovery and someone who does this work all the time, it's really hard when someone says, oh, have you lost weight? And you're going, you're watching my weight, you're monitoring my weight, you're noticing. It's so insidious. And I just wish people would not comment on each other's weight. And not just not comment if they've gained weight, but like when you're commenting on someone's like weight loss, you have no idea. First of all, you're assuming it's a good thing. Like you have no idea. Maybe it's grief. Maybe it's trauma. Maybe it's an eating disorder. Maybe it's a sickness, like maybe it's cancer. Like you just have no idea what you're like complimenting them on. And I just wish that we would stop, I think, feeling free to discuss women's bodies in that way.
Does anyone have an update on where Brittany is now? Is she having...
Well, she's working out on Instagram.
She burnt her gym down.
On purpose?
No, but I mean, it was the weirdest. She put up a video and she was like, oh, you know, I burnt my gym down, but everyone's fine. I was like, Brittany, how the fuck did you burn your friend? I think there was candles involved. So, but she seems very happy. And I mean, it's funny with Brittany. I root for Brittany. Like, I have such a soft spot for her. Like, I just really want her to be happy and to do well and just... oh, I don't know, find love and just for everything to be okay for her, because I just feel like we've seen everything that she's gone through, and I just don't understand. I mean, I'm not a parent, but I just don't know how you would allow your child to become a star. Like, I think it's a form of
to
child
become
abuse.
Your livelihood.
Yeah.
Like, it's not your kid's job to pay your rent and your mortgage. Mm. It would be, I mean, it would be if either myself or Sophie had an attractive enough child and someone was offering a hefty fee to put that child, I think, Sophie, I know I might take the bait.
Oh, I don't know. I
would
think,
you?
Depends
on the fee.
No, you definitely know my feelings on all this kind of stuff. It just freaks me the hell out. Like, even social media stuff freaks me out with kids. And I honestly think that they're all coming to sue us in a few years' time. Like, we are absolutely going down for all of the crimes against our kids we've committed with the internet. I really think that our kids will grow up and look at our generation, the kind of like older millennials, and be like, okay, so they were like toddlers playing with a new toy that they had no idea what to do with.
Yeah.
Like, completely. Yeah. We're like, do you know the way we laugh at like methamphetamine being prescribed to housewives in the 50s? We're like, we're those people popping meth to clean the living room. That's our behavior online. But I agree with you though, Louise, in that like, I think that we'll have this kind of, you know, empathy for Britney Spears because she's a peer, even though she's had this like completely batshit life. I think her rebellion was just kind of delayed, and I know that she has her illnesses potentially, but I also you couldn't help but see her kind of I suppose her losing it publicly in 2007 as like a kind of a grandiose fuck you to everyone. I mean, just, oh, when you think about what all these women tolerated because it was just so much less, there was just much less calling out. Like that whole public debate about, was it Eminem was supposed to have taken her virginity? Do you remember that? Mm. It was just like an ongoing national conversation. Imagine it, like it's insanity. And I do think we are much better now at not kind of doing that to our stars. Or if people begin to, I do think people are better at putting the foot down. I also think it's very, I get very happy whenever I see Billie Eilish anywhere, just covered, clothed, head to toe. And I just love that I don't know anything about her body.
But I suppose with the Billie Eilish thing is that I also wonder, because I think that teenage girls should be able to like wear whatever they want to wear and not be sexualized by older people and by society at large. And I also wonder about the fact that Billie Eilish feels like more comfortable with people not knowing what her body looks like, that she knows as a teenage girl that if she wore, let's say, what another teenage girl was wearing, that there would be commentary on her body. And I think that's fucked up.
So like this kind of a reverse oppression almost there.
Well, I mean, I don't know Billie Eilish, so I have no idea, you know, but I think she has said that about, oh, you know, that she just doesn't want people commenting on her body. And I'm like, oh God, I really wish that at 16 or whatever age that she was, that she could feel safe to be in a public space and not worry that people were going to comment on that.
I definitely see that point. And then I guess I also see this kind of other side to it potentially of like, say in 1997, it just absolutely wouldn't have been an option for Britney Spears to become a success without her, I don't know, 20 inches of abs on display. Whereas at least now there is even an option for a woman like Billie Eilish, which I feel is like, have we somewhat reached a more positive note?
I mean, again, I suppose if you think of even the, was it 1999, that Rolling Stones cover with Britney, and they really lent into that, like Lolita, you know, this kind of the teenage seductress. And now people would be like, this is pedophilia. What the fuck are you doing? Do not put this on your cover. So I do think culturally, even the way that we talk about young women and sexuality has really changed. Thank God.
Yes, absolutely.
I read this amazing book and I cannot for the life of me think of the name of it off the top of my head, but it talked about how that throughout history that these women that have had these very public meltdowns, let's say like a Britney or Amy Winehouse or Lindsay Lohan or, you know, whoever, that like this, like the way the media portrays them, it holds them up as like a warning to other women. It's like, if you step out of line, if you act unruly, if you misbehave, if you don't follow the rules, this is what will happen to you and this is how we will punish you. And I think there's something really powerful about that, particularly someone like Britney Spears, who was first held up as this just paragon of virtue, like the perfect woman, you know, like this is how we should look, this is how we should behave. And then to see, I suppose, the way that they destroyed her after that as well. And for that also to be held up to us going, you know, be careful.
And there's definite parallels between that behaviour and when you look at Amy Winehouse and that, and the, I guess it is true, the media, the paparazzi, that behaviour was, we ate it all up collectively. We couldn't get enough. It couldn't get bad enough. We fed into every tiny, and I guess part of that, you could blame the media, but part of that is human behaviour.
Oh no, we.
That is how 100%. We behave. And if that's the case, and that's how, like, we will kind of feed like vultures on carcasses like that, what has to be put in place in order to stop that happening? I guess an understanding of, like, how many times does this have to happen? And we have to watch it and then mourn someone's loss. Yeah. Like, who is, I can't remember her name,
Caroline Flack.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus Christ, it happened nearly, I mean, we get one of these people very regularly and we watch their demise and we just sit back and eat popcorn. And we not only sit back and eat popcorn, we discuss how terrible it is at the same time.
Yeah.
We go on podcasts and we write articles about how awful it is, our behaviour, but that is part of it. That's just a new kind of, sort of element is.
And I think that's such a good point. And I suppose, it's such a great point. And I think the problem is that, you know, it happened, let's say, with Diana, where people were so angry at the media and the paparazzi. And it's like, but who's buying the papers? Like, why is the demand there for those pictures? Why all those photographers get money? It's because we were buying the papers. And then with Caroline Flack, it's like, well, you're clicking on the articles. Like, you're commenting. You're giving them what they want. And there is a demand for it. Therefore, there will be more. And I think that there has to be a sense of, like, personal responsibility, that if we feel genuine horror at what is happening to these young women and what is happening to women in general, where they are torn apart for our entertainment, it's like we actually have as consumers a modicum of power in that situation. And I think it is just, you know, deprive them of that oxygen and absolutely say, you know,
but yeah, but that type of behavior is new because we never have communicated like this before, so we collectively have to learn to not, like, just don't click it. Click that link.
Yeah.
And that's brand new to us, you know, as a society. Mm. So we'll learn how to behave like that. And that's how, I guess, we'll kind of draw focused areas that we deem are better. But it's, you know, it's one of those things. That's celebrity. And I guess, you know, nowadays, not only are you have your get, so if you're a new celebrity, you came off Love Island, the expectation from a public perspective is that you're completely open. We see inside your living room every day. We want to see what you're, you know, exactly what you're doing in real time at all times. And that just is, again, just absolute recipe for disaster. There's nowhere to hide for that person. There's no privacy.
Mm.
Again, we're just kind of watching kind of micro meltdowns on the regular.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is bleak. And we have no suggestion as to how this gets any better. So that's kind of...
Is there anything you would be bet into or like to bin before we let you go?
Okay, well, I'm bet into Never Have I Ever, which is Mindy Kaling's new series on Netflix about an Indian American girl. And it is so funny. Brilliant. And just, it made me cry. And it was just really, oh God, I just really loved it. And you know what? I won't say about binning anything because I always feel like... If someone said that about one of my books, I'd feel really hurt. So I'm like,
oh yeah, no, you can bin things like, I mean, in the past I have binned Instagram Live, for example.
Joggers.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you
okay.
can just bin a kind of a social moray that's pissing you off even.
Oh, I mean, I was going to say, oh, I don't know, you put me on the spot, I can't think.
Oh no, don't feel. I mean, I'll bin something while you're thinking because this has been kind of getting on my tits for a couple of weeks and I felt I was being quite restrained by not saying it, but now I'm just saying it. How are we back to chain mails? Have you guys been receiving these emails looking for recipes, poems, chit-chats?
Yes.
God damn it. Like, how? I was like, I feel like I was dealing with chain mails all through my teenage years somehow. And now I was like, I thought we'd all escaped and now they're back with a vengeance.
Do you know what actually I'm going to bin, which has sort of taken inspiration from yours, Sophie, is... Okay, so my mother and my aunt and my boyfriend's mother keep sending me videos and memes. Mm. And they're like, these videos are like 7 minutes long. And they're like, oh, this is so inspirational. And I'm like, I'm not going to watch a 7 minute video about a kitten that like takes care of these baby ducks. Like, I don't give a fuck.
I got that too. Did you? From my grandmother and my mother.
I'm like... What is with women of a certain age and these videos? Make it stop. And the thing is that I can say that to my mom. I can go, please fuck off. But like when my boyfriend's mother sends it to me, I have to say, that's so cute. Thank you so much for sending it to me.
Oh, it's brilliant. Like, because you can completely not watch when it's coming from your own mother directly.
Yes.
But the kind of potential, like, mother-in-law sort of person in your life, you're watching that all the way through. And you're making a specific reference to let her know that you watched it all the way through.
Exactly. Something that happened in the movie. You're like, oh, that was such a cute moment.
Well, that's the perfect, yes. Put them all in the bin, please. I mean, while we have somehow loads of time on our hands, I absolutely still don't want to waste precious oxygen minutes of my life on the endless WhatsApp-ery memes. Ah, well, Brill, we will let you go. Thank you so much, Louise.
Thank you for having me.
It was great to revisit the dark times of the late 90s.
I know. How did we manage to sort of, you know, emerge relatively unscathed?
Are we unscathed?
Did we?
I mean, relatively.